everyone, it's Meg Linehan here. If women's soccer is your calling, I'm excited to say my podcast, Full Time, is back on May 23rd. Join myself and my new amazing co-host, Tamara Griffin, every Thursday as we take a deep dive into the biggest stories in the women's game, from the NWSL to the Olympics. We'll bring you in-depth reporting that only The Athletic can provide, chat to leaders within the industry, and chart the next phase of the U.S. Women's National Team as they look to rebuild. Just search for Full Time wherever you get your podcasts and follow and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Eagles, that performance was pretty weak, man. I told you, why didn't you guys save the embarrassment and get on your knees and beg for mercy? Now I told you, you were nothing. What a homecoming opponent. You just saw what happens to you. You get beat down up and down the field. So now, why don't you guys pack it up? Get out of my stadium. Now that you just admitted that we're the greatest, and stare out of my face. Now can you dig it?
The only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
All right, Cowboys 41, Eagles 21 is your final from AT&T Stadium. We've got Father John Mishoda standing by live from AT&T Stadium for some live reaction. And also, we've got Saad Youssef and Kevin KT Turner to break this all down. Welcome in to the About Them Cowboys podcast. Kent Garrison here running things. This podcast is presented by Visa. Visa is a network working for everyone. Everything was working for the Dallas Cowboys tonight, KT. And I think what stuck out to me the most, just kind of my thesis coming out of the game, is it's just so obvious tonight how much further along the Cowboys are in this division, how much further ahead they are on a pure talent standpoint if they can stay healthy and play up to their standards. And the defense was flying around tonight. That's what stuck out to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was thinking, like, it's first time in a long time that it feels like we had the Cowboys winning a game by multiple scores kind of very handily. Oh, it feels like every time the Cowboys win a game in the last couple years, it always feels like it's always like a nail biter, kind of over from the start. Like it was, you know, 20-7 at halftime, and it felt like it was 38-7 or 41-7. Is it kind of like that all night for you, John?
Yeah, it really was, and there were just a lot of opportunities there where I felt like if Philadelphia was a better team, they could have taken advantage of them. I mean, everything was going in the Cowboys' favor, and then all of a sudden, Fletcher Cox fumble recovery looked like could have been called an interception, whatever it was, touchdown. They got them at 7-7. You're just kind of like, you can't give away plays like this. I mean, this team is not on your level. You could just tell from the very beginning. But then you give away plays like that, and then all of a sudden it allows the team to have life and keeps them in the game. But one thing I have to point out is just how electric it was in this place. Like, it felt like a playoff game in here. I'm going to tell you right now, that Jimmy Johnson at halftime, when he said, how about them Cowboys? That is as loud as this place can possibly get. It can't get any louder than that. Like, it was so crazy how loud it got in there. There was no question that they had to heard that in the locker room before they came out for the second half because it got that. I mean, it was crazy. I was expecting them to say that. I didn't expect the crowd to get as loud as it did. And it just, from the very beginning, you could just tell everybody was like really into this game. Obviously, a Monday night game against a division rival like that. You know, Jimmy Johnson, all these Troy Aikman, all these former players are here. It just was the makings of just like the perfect. It was exactly what you'd want out of like a home playoff game, you know, in a game that you really want to, you got to win to advance. And it also helps that looks like the Eagles just really aren't that good, particularly at the quarterback position.
Jalen Hurts sucks.
We can talk about that later.
Jalen Hurts sucks. I'll throw that out there. He sucks.
Man. Man, it looked rough. But for as negative as we are in here sometimes, I have to give a lot of credit to the defense. Not only like the pick six, obviously that's a huge play by Trayvon Diggs, but there were just some moments there where the Eagles are kind of getting back into it. And for one, that series right after Dak didn't get in, even though it looked pretty clear that he got in, and they took over at their own one. And that's a situation right there where they could have got 4 or 5 yards and kind of got out of the back of their end zone. And for the Cowboys to get a 3-and-out there, that was just, I thought that was a big time statement, especially when you factor in the injuries they have, guys that weren't out there. It wasn't like that their defense was 100%. I was kind of surprised at the beginning that Micah Parsons was going to stay at edge rusher just because of the fact with Jalen Hurts. I felt like it would be a better decision to kind of spy him, but the plan obviously worked out. You know, he was able to get a lot of pressure. Osa Digizua, like they're just, I mean, even Chauncey Golston getting in there, you know, just like young playmakers on the defense.
Randy.
That kind of not only were good tonight, but give you kind of the feeling that they really are possibly building something over there, which just seems crazy to even think about from where they were, not even 365 days ago, just, you know, at the end of last season.
It's a whole different story on defense compared to last year at this time. When your hands in the air and, okay, well, we'll give them time to figure it out. These guys are playing hard from the beginning, you know, every game. And I think part of that, like, clearly it's very easy to call out someone like Micah Parsons or Trevon Diggs. But the way they play is just different. They haven't had guys like that. And it's almost not like – it's not like not – no offense intended at anyone else. You just needed another wave of dudes who are all 100% – down to business, let's go from the beginning every day. I mean, it sounds generic, but like that tone setting thing, that matters on defense, and they
swagger.
Got it with those dudes.
They gotta have they swagger. Got they need attitude. Yes. They need swagger. And now they have it.
And Micah brought it too, because you can have swagger, but if you're not the guy in the field that's also making plays, that
yeah,
doesn't
you
really
gotta make plays.
Anyway,
that's what I mean. They're making plays. That's where the swagger comes from, is the plays they're making, you know.
But here's the thing, like to get a defensive player like that, that has that swagger like that and plays and puts up like that, especially as a rookie, you generally have to do it very early in the draft. You have to do it within like the top 5, 6, 7 picks. And they were lucky to get him at 12 because he is a top 5 pick.
Yeah. And also I think it's also consistency of doing it from the beginning and all the way through the end. Like I know Trevon Diggs, you know, the pick six was impressive, but there was that play, the pass breakup that he had in the fourth quarter on Jalen Reagor, which was also really nice, the tackle that he had. So it's not like, you know, it wasn't flashes. We saw flashes in the past. I think a good example actually of a guy, you know, we talk about Jordan Lewis and how he's a ball magnet. I feel like he flashes every now and then, and then it's not really a consistent throughout the entire game thing. And when you talk about Trevon Diggs, it's not about the pick six, honestly. Like, I mean, the pick six was great, but Anthony Brown has had pick sixes before. Like, these guys have. There's guys on this roster that have done this before, but to have a complete game is where I think the difference is.
Yeah, and then when's the last time you've just had a DB like that have three picks in three games? Like yeah. It's not even like, you know, you can have a pick here or there, and you're kind of like, well, this guy was due. He hasn't had a pick in forever. But to do it in three, like, it's pretty obvious that they watch film during the week, and they're seeing that, hey, 7 is a guy we have to worry about. Well, let's not throw to anywhere near him. He also has Devontae Smith. He has Jalen Hurts, are guys that he played with in college. They know what he's capable of, and he still gets a play like that. I mean, that's the difference maker type stuff that, like, leaves you. I tweeted this during the game, scratching your head at, like, how does this guy fall to 51? The Cowboys could have taken him over CeeDee Lamb in the first round, and nobody would even be sitting here today saying anything other than, yeah, no, he's a first round pick. That's what we expect him to make plays like that. To get him at 51 was a complete steal.
It's also kind of ironic that today the Panthers traded for C.J. Henderson, the cornerback at Florida, who went to Jacksonville. And, like, the Panthers acquired him, and I got curious, and I started looking at the other cornerbacks, and I was like, there's Jeff Gladney.
Who went first?
Do we go in order there? I wrote it down.
Yeah, just name who went first.
Jeff Okuda.
Yeah, Trevon Diggs a million times better than him. A million times.
Jeff Okuda can't stay on the field. I think he's out again this season, isn't he?
He is. For the season again. Even when he's been on the field, he hasn't played that well. He's not played like a top 5 pick.
C.J. Henderson, who got traded again, might deal with him with the Panthers next week. At 16, it was A.J. Terrell in Atlanta, who's been good, but he's hurt now. Damon Arnett in Las Vegas, the Ohio State cornerback. Noah Igbinoghene. Oh, it was such a problem. The Dolphins took Igbinoghene. Yeah, it was a problem at the time. The Vikings and Jeff Gladney, the TCU kid. I think the Vikings cut him. Let's see. Jalen Johnson of the Bears. He's a pretty good player. And then, you know, Trevon Diggs at 51. I mean, he was the 8th or 9th corner taken in that draft. And look, every team's got their story with that type of guy, too. The Cowboys have one on offense with Dak. It's just... To me, I just thought it was real ironic. I didn't even think about it until that pick six happened. And I was like, oh, man, yeah, C.J. Henderson got traded today. And just kind of piecing it all together, like, holy cow, they got real lucky. So we were talking about the Cowboys maybe taking C.J. Henderson, pick 17.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure glad they got the guy they got because he is a game changer.
We were talking, you know, when we were doing the tiers episode about, you know, when the jury's kind of still out on Trevon. Like, we're at week three, and I'm already convinced, like, he's the dude, you know? Like, he's going to be the dude, I think, as long as he can stay healthy. I think I've seen enough from the mental side to see like, this guy's got a high football IQ, and he can really make some plays. So I was anticipating, like, week eight, we'd still be talking about, like, how he was coming on, but, like, we're already at week three, and I'm already convinced.
Yeah, and there's going to be games where he gives up some big plays. I mean, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you play, I'll take that. I'll take that.
When you play the aggressive style that he plays, yeah, you're going to have that. Man, he really does have the hands of a wide receiver. And that's just so rare because, generally speaking, when you have that elite athleticism that he does, you're almost always, you just stay at wide receiver when you have hands like that. But then to be rotated over to play DB, to be cool with it, and then to continue to elevate your game to the point where, like, I don't think he's played his best ball yet. Then it just stands out even more in the Cowboys just because they just don't have guys like that. If he got drafted by the Ravens and was doing this, or the Steelers, you'd kind of be like, yeah, they find guys like this. But, like, Cowboys haven't had guys like this in a long time. And so to see that in a big moment like this against, you know, the Eagles division team, Monday Night Football, on top of what he's done already. A lot of positives there. But KT, let's just talk about the one negative real quick. What were you thinking right before halftime when Mike McCarthy didn't call that timeout? Because Mike said after the game that he was comfortable with their lead and he didn't want to risk anything happening. And so he was fine going into the locker room with the score at where it was. And that was actually the final question he took. And that was it. No follow-up.
I told one of my detractors online that I wasn't going to bring it up.
But I had to because it is one of those things, like we said last week, where you're just kind of like, yeah, hey, you get a win. So you know, those things kind of get tossed to the wayside, but you're just kind of like, well, what if one of those things ends up costing you a game that you should win? And here, I can point out here with one negative. Let me point out a positive then. While that might have been a questionable decision, people might have said that it was a questionable decision to not kick the field goal there and then to go for it on fourth down on the touchdown pass in the back where Dak rolled out and found Cedric Wilson.
Oh, Peyton Manning thought it was a very questionable decision.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I want to point out, I tweeted this, it was kind of wild the way that whole thing went down. Because from our vantage point in the press box, you can see the Cowboys bench real well. And generally when the offense is on the field, the defense is kind of balling all the benches and they're with the coaches and they're kind of going over adjustments that they need to make for the next series. And when instead of running out Zerline, when they ran out Cedric Wilson, everybody got off the defensive side of the bench. Everybody got up on the sideline and was like, we got to see what's going on here. Like I think everybody was genuinely surprised. Like, oh, they're going to go for this right here. Mainly because they've ran so many other plays in the red zone. They didn't work. And then to have that play work, you're kind of like, why don't you run this one before? So that was a wild sequence there, even if they don't get it there, I think it's pretty obvious they still win the game. But it was interesting to watch that go down.
I was frustrated. Yeah. I was so furious at the time. Like, I was texting you guys. I was like, what is it? What's going on right now? But after hearing his response, can you imagine if Dak had thrown a pick or something? Or, you know, and that would have been the response. It's like, God, Mike, just kneel the ball. Get into the half, you know? So, like, I'm sure he's willing to take, like, the criticism of going in for the half instead of like the opposite, like the worst case scenario there. I totally see Mike's point there. And I did not expect to. Go ahead, Zod.
I just don't think 20-7 is enough of a lead for you to really sit on. I understand. And it all goes back to really what the identity of your team is. If your team is a defensive identity team, then you can rest on your defense. But if you're an offensive team, then you have to go for it every chance that you get. And it wasn't like you're going to have, like, you know, the 47 seconds that Aaron Rodgers had. You were going to have like a minute something to go. I just think that, you know, you really have to take it at that point.
You're saying Jalen Hurts can't drive the field in 20 seconds with no timeouts? That's what you're saying.
Hold on. I was just about to say, well, like, he's really going to, like, Mike's going to go to the podium and go, did you guys see their quarterback? Like, I'm not worried about them. I'm not worried about them driving the length of the field. I'm worried about us having like some kind of a freak turnover like that scored their touchdown on. So let's just not even put ourselves in that position. because frankly, we don't think this guy can go up and down the field on us. And which is crazy to think about, because again, this is a defense that last year we were like, this is the worst defense I've ever seen. And so for to make the turnaround, I mean, obviously they added some pieces, but to make such a turnaround the way that they have, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Dan Quinn.
His excuse before the half, though, let me just get off my chest. His excuse before the half is complete bullshit, because, dude, he was clearly thinking about it, and he was clearly – there was a point on his face where the ref comes over and says,
like, are you sure you don't want to take a timeout? He's like, no, I'm sure. You can tell even the ref was like, dude, I think you need to take clear.
Let me just throw out a suggestion. A lot of other coaches take timeouts. Do you want to take – no, you don't? Okay, cool.
There's a lot of Cowboy fans who like rewound it at halftime, just like, okay, what actually happened here?
But it does make it worse though when you have the Peyton Eli show on, and Peyton is losing his mind about it. That only adds fuel to the fire.
Dude, Peyton was losing his mind about it at 45 seconds left, though.
No, he was.
Yeah. I put a video up on my Twitter account at KT Fun Tweets, and I put a Twitter video up, and just kind of walked through it, and I was like, you take the timeout at 1:30. Or 1:45. Yeah. Like, there was a lot of time on the clock. It was 2nd and 31, and they threw a slant route to Rager that got clearly 5 to 8 yards. Right. So you've got a 3rd and 24. Like, I can at least – and I really – you almost gave up the third down on that little swing pass to Miles Sanders. Like, I almost get not taking it then. Like, after that, right. I get it because it's 4th and 5 at the 50. Philadelphia might be like, screw it. What do I have to lose? To me, right before 3rd and 24 with a 1:40 left – bang the timeout, as Garrett would say, and then here you
bang
go.
It.
You can draw out. You have time to talk about a good defensive plan on 3rd and 24 against Jalen Hurts. And my God, Bo Wolf, who was on the preview podcast today, I mean, he nailed it. Jalen Hurts can only roll to his right. That's amazing. I mean, every time, roll up, panic, roll to my right. Oh, it's so bad. So, but you know, I don't kill McCarr. Whatever. I find myself very thankful that we have a Dan Quinn. And I also want to say this. I thought a very balanced offensive attack in the first half, especially, and another good game plan from Kellen from the beginning. You know, the 7-minute drive in the second quarter, obviously a thing of beauty. But, man, getting Dalton Schultz involved, the tight end screens, the running attack from both running backs, whatever wide receiver you want, we'll find a way to get him the ball. A deep shot to CeeDee Lamb early. I just thought it was just another great. It's easy to code. Oh, great. The offense did good. Praise Kellen. But again, very off balance. Philadelphia didn't know it was coming.
Okay. Speaking of which, like, we get to watch practice, and obviously they're not going to do these plays, and we get to see them. What about Connor McGovern playing fullback? Who saw that coming? Like, it seems like every week there's just like a little something new wrinkle. I mean, last week we saw Tyron and some of the offensive linemen lining up out wide, you know? So, yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't a perfect game, but when you, all things considered, you're just like, oh, and then here, let me just throw in probably even the best news of all of this is after the game, they said that there's no injuries to report. I mean, anytime you get through one of these games, especially a division game like this, without any injuries to report, I mean, that's a huge, huge win. I mean, you saw the Eagles lose some key players in this game, or at least go down for a little bit. So, you know, there's some big hits in these games, you know, and to come out without any injuries, I thought was pretty big.
Yeah. Also, I mean, just Cedric Wilson. Also, I know that one catch down the sideline didn't count and everything, but just for him, the way that he plays, and the way that he and Dak are on the same page, mm-hmm. like that play in the red zone there, it didn't really work. Like that wasn't how it was supposed to go. And Cedric Wilson was right on cue with it. So I think he had a really good game as well.
It is interesting they bring him in on that play, because Dak likes to say about how Cedric has a background, former quarterback, and how so when they talk over plays and go over different things, they're generally on the same page. And maybe that's something that factored in on that play. That's a good point, though, Sai.
How about Ezekiel Elliott, boys, 95 yards rushing on 17 carries, 2 touchdowns. The dude was, I mean, he came to play tonight. He had some fire. I don't know if it was Monday night or Philadelphia or what, but it looked like the old Zeke, John.
Well, he's been hearing the noise. There's no question about that. He's been hearing, you know, the criticism, the people talking about the contract, Tony Pollard having the big game. I think all of that factors in that. He was running hard. I mean, not that I don't think there's ever times he doesn't run hard, just the breaking tackles, making the big runs. We don't really see that as much. And so it was very clear early on that he was trying to set the tone. And yeah, I mean, Randall, I'm sure he wishes he had a couple more carries and could have got over 100, but yeah, he certainly played well.
But they split him pretty evenly. They got Tony Pollard got 11 carries for 60 yards too. So they each averaged 5.5 yards even. So that seems like a great game plan from last week carrying over to this week. KT, go ahead.
Well, KT, real quick, you trying to pay Dalton Schultz?
No, not yet.
Not he's really not Jarwin. Man.
He's really improved. He's he, past he, Jarwin. He, no, he is.
I think
really
you need.
Improved.
I think you need. I don't know. He reminds me of Witten a lot. He really does. Like just his style of play and you know where when they go to him at points of the game and stuff really reminds me of his skill set. So I don't know. I mean, it's all about what they want. I mean, Jarwin's much more of a stretch the field dynamic playmaker than Dalton Schultz. So
it's just interesting that they score all these points in this game, and you're just like, well, Amari didn't really do much. Oh yeah. Hey, remember that Michael Gallup? He's hurt. He's not even playing. Like you didn't hear much out
DeMarcus
of Jarwin.
Right. Yeah. Not
well,
here.
Yeah, but I meant just on the offense. And then they're scoring all these points because they have so many other options. And obviously the game planning is working. And I know Peyton pointed that out during their broadcast about how important it is for Dak to stay in that same system year after year. And you kind of just get in a rhythm where, you know, kind of you guys are on the same page in that. And that's where you all of a sudden see all these other playmakers, you know, making plays. And you know, I know there's times where people will be like, yeah, you can't, don't mention this Cowboys offense in the same breath as the Rams or the Chiefs. Well, you can certainly do that, especially when they're healthy.
No, absolutely. You know, go ahead, Todd.
Well, real quick, I think another guy, Terrence Steele, I mean, just for not being a disaster the last 2 weeks, I think he deserves credit for that. And he hasn't been bad. So I think, you know, what the expectation was, we can talk about the skill guys filling in, but Terrence Steele is also doing a fine job.
And Jalen Hargrave and Fletcher Cox are two of the best defensive tackles. It's the best. That might be the best defensive tackle tandem you play all year. Maybe Washington comes into play. So I thought that they were able to run early was huge because not everyone does that against them, and they were able to do that. Now, again, it wasn't the most explosive night on the ground or anything like that. They ran a stat on and it was basically the Cowboys under Dak are 26-0 when they run the ball more than they throw it. I think it's a perfect example, though, of getting ahead, and that's how you use the running game. Honestly, in the second half, Dak took a few more hits than I would have liked for my taste. At some point, I was kind of like, what are we even doing right now? Just hand it off. Like, let's stop with the rollouts and stuff like that. But, you know, it's 27-14, and that's me being a little naive because 27-14 felt like 38-14. Just because the Cowboys dominated the entire game front to back.
It's funny you say that about starting fast because I'm telling you, when they lost the coin toss and Zeke was one of the captains out there and the Eagles deferred, Zeke was like celebrating as he ran to the sideline. Like it was like, this is exactly what we wanted. Even if we won the toss, we're going to do this because, you know, and there's a little bit of that with Jason Garrett too, that was the kind of thing he wanted them to build too. They wanted to take the ball. They wanted to score first. That's just how that they were going to be built that way, be aggressive. And hey, they did that today, and it certainly worked. They set the tone early, and it seemed to carry on. But then again, I say that, and it's just like, well, I mean, this Eagles team might be pretty bad, you know? Like, I mean, it's still, the sample size is still small. I mean, this could be a bad team.
It absolutely could be a bad team. I couldn't help but think, like, you got, I don't want to get too far ahead, obviously, but Carolina, New York, and then you got the Patriots, and then you get that bye week, and then after that bye week, you get Gallup and Lyle Collins coming back and all that stuff. It's like, man, this is, if you play to your capabilities, you can very easily be 5-1 at the bye week.
Right.
I'm not sure it's where my head was after week one. You know, I think I was like, oh, okay, 4-2 would be great, you know. But this is, you know, it's just so clear. And this is, look, we talked about they would have moonwalked to the, you know, I've said it a million times, we know that. If Dak didn't get hurt last year, they win the division. We know that. It's even more clear this year. Like, with what's going on in Washington right now.
Yeah, that Heinicke thing's a cute story, but, like, how far are you really going with that?
You're going to about week six, and then you're probably going to run someone else out there.
Yeah, I mean, New York is obviously very bad. But so, you can. But here's the thing. Even if the Eagles are a terrible team, like you could easily have won this game like 21-13, but they put it on them. So you'll take that in the NFL against anybody. I don't care who you're playing. I don't care if you're playing the Lions.
Cowboys do have some, you know, obviously division games left, but they've got some tough opponents. I mean, they're playing, you know, the Chiefs, they're playing the Cardinals, so the Raiders, who are very good this year, apparently. So, you know, it'll be a tough test outside of the obvious division games, and they've got Carolina minus McCaffrey and J.C. Horn coming up next, KT, which we will preview in about a day. So,
yeah, we'll get – yeah, go ahead, John.
I was going to say one last thing for me. One of my highlights tonight was as we're waiting for Mike McCarthy to come to the podium, in walks Dak Prescott wearing an 88 CD Lamb jersey, and he's waiting for McCarthy, and when McCarthy gets to the podium –
You mean Dez?
Yeah, who did I say?
Yeah, Dak.
Okay, yeah, Dez Bryant. And as McCarthy goes to the podium, Dez yells to him, "Hey, coach, you know, that was a catch in Green Bay." And you could totally tell it caught McCarthy off guard, like, "What? Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, all right, what?" And as he goes to leave, Kent, he goes, "Yeah, and fix this, Rich." And he didn't say, but it was just funny because there's some people that probably
that
know.
Too. He
some
said that to Rich? Yeah. That's awesome. Rich is in there
too. How about y'all fix this shit, Rich?
It was one of the highlights of my night. I wasn't expecting that at all.
McCarthy's like, "No, it wasn't a catch. I remember. I'm the one who challenged it." It definitely that would have been funny if they had a little back and forth. I would have loved that.
Yeah, or what if he's like, "Well, I don't know. Did you watch the game last night? Yeah. There's still 4 minutes to go, and we have Aaron Rodgers in the game. Look what he did with about less than 40 seconds. I think he would have been fine getting down the field." But no, he didn't get in. He didn't get into any of that. He laughed, and he was a good sport about it. But yeah.
That's funny. Good to see Dez supporting.
I will say this, and I won't harp on it, but it is interesting to see guys because when it's a Monday night game or a Sunday night game or whatever, it's in the spotlight. You know, when you've got Shill tweeting the stuff he was tweeting at halftime, and Bill Barnwell and Peyton Manning,
that was interesting. Guys,
like that's something that does kind of spread like wildfire a little more.
Shill said
that you're hiding on a Sunday.
Shill said,
you know,
that they should teach a college course on the PR that job that they did for Mike McCarthy to get him this job. Like it's a world class. Like they could do lectures on it. Like that. That's one of the best tweets I've seen ever about Mike McCarthy.
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, and I agree with it to a certain extent, but it also comes back to like how many coaches have won a Super Bowl. Like that obviously helped his resume. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you could sit there and have a good PR run on a lot of guys, but the fact that he did that and he had that success against the Cowboys, like that helped him as well, you know?
Yeah. And also like one thing that I will give him credit for, and Peyton Manning said this on the broadcast as well, the fact that he kept Kellen Moore, because as an offensive guy would have been really easy for him to come in, implement his system, his terminology, everything that he wanted to do. But I do think he deserves a lot of credit for. I know we blame him for a lot of the stuff that he is doing, but I'm saying for the stuff that he didn't do in not replacing Kellen Moore, he definitely deserves credit.
I'm giving
for that.
Jerry credit for that because I think that was part of the deal.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, then if you feel that way about that, then do you give him credit for Dan Quinn, or do you feel that's his hand was forced to get rid of his DC and this guy was clearly the best, you know, available DC out there? It was a no-brainer to hire him.
I think they gave Mike a chance. They said, "Bring your guy in." And then they said, "All right, that didn't work. Now we're going to bring our guy
the
in."
The hell was that?
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, Dan Quinn is not jobless right now if it isn't for the Cowboys. He's somebody else's DC right now.
Right.
He was getting a job. And they had to act fast on that because he was going to take one somewhere else, you know?
I just think McCarthy took the job knowing that Kellen Moore was going to be the OC. Like that's what the Cowboys wanted. They wanted to keep him.
Sure. So. Sure.
And if he wanted to stay. So
real quick, because you can't have this, if you can't have this conversation after a big win, then, you know, what the hell are we even doing? Right.
Oh boy.
NFC power rankings. Where are the Cowboys?
Oh,
if seven teams make the playoffs.
Oh man. After this week, I'll go Rams, Bucks, yeah. Packers, Cowboys, probably. That'd be my ranking.
Yeah. I'm putting the Cardinals ahead of them, but yeah, I'm right there with Kent with the Cardinals ahead as well.
Yeah, and then they're in a mix with like the Saints and there's a few others that are in there, but
Seattle.
But it doesn't really matter because they're not in the NFC West, so they don't have to worry about all that. They just have to win this dumpster fire division, which there's no excuse that they don't, and then they're rolling because then you get to host a playoff game. And the biggest thing for me is like whether you rank them one or seven or five or eight. The bottom line is that wherever it is, they're not that far from one. Like in terms of like, it's not like that whoever's you have at one right now, you're just like, yeah, they can't play with them. Yeah, they can. There's not a team in the NFL right now where you're just, I don't know about that team. You don't want to see them again.
We'll see what happens with Washington, but there's a path to going 6-0 in the division that's very clear based on who you have. And I'm not sure that path exists for the other teams at the top there. Maybe Green Bay, but Minnesota could be something. Like the Rams are going to have to beat, you know, when you go play the Cardinals and the Seahawks are all going to beat up on each other. So going to be a 2 or a 3 seed is not like crazy. I guess what I'm saying is there's a difference in backpedaling into the playoffs at near 500 like Washington did last year. And going, hey, we're 12-5 and we're a legit or we're, you know, 13-4 might be asking a lot or whatever. And we're a legit player in the NFC. There's a difference in how it feels.
Absolutely. They're not Washington from last year, especially Washington going in there with Heineke. No, they're way better than that. And I mean, you already seen the way that they played against the Bucs to start the season. And I don't think it would be much different if they played the Rams or Arizona. Like, I'm not necessarily saying that they would win right now. I don't think that any of those teams is just blowing them out of the water. It's not going to be a good game, especially if you're talking about the atmosphere that was here tonight and they're hosting the game in the first round. They can hang with any of those teams.
Yeah, and again, this is still like without three of their top 20, 25 players, Lyle Collins, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Michael Gallup. I mean, that's really impressive.
93,000, good crowd at AT&T Stadium. I will say this, Monday night, Eagles, first home game in a long time since the pandemic. Hey, it's easy to be rowdy. Where are you going to be on a noon game Sunday against Carolina? Because do it again. I think we'll see if the crowd's up for it. You know, a big part of the crowd being into it is your team getting out to a big lead and playing in an explosive manner. I mean, you hit CeeDee Lamb on a deep pass on your first possession. Hey, that kind of sets a tone all night as well. So, you know, but
I'll tell you, Zeke getting first down runs and doing the feed me gesture, though, that still rides big time with the fans. Like, they still get into that all day long, even if it is a 7-yard carry to get a first down. Like, they still were really, and again, Jimmy at halftime, man, that place was rocking. Like, I'm telling you, like, I've been at the Seattle playoff game that they won here plenty other times against the Eagles, other NFC East teams. This is as loud as I've heard it. I mean, this was a great
invite. How stoked are they going to be when he gets the Ring of Honor induction? Oh. Man, that place is going to be lit. I cannot wait for that.
Apparently, all he has to say is, how about them Cowboys?
And
he
will. How long have they been waiting for him to say that in that building? You know, like, that was just a lot of energy being let out, I feel
it
like.
It really was. It was awesome.
How about them Cowboys? Well, you know, they've been, you know, kind of mediocre for about 25 years since you've been gone. Anything else that we need to hit on, Kent, John, Son?
We'll be back short week this week because of a shorty. So we'll be back and talking Panthers.
Oh man, talking Panthers.
I look forward to it.
Get stoked.
With sharp teeth and claws, we'll be here for Saad Youssef. For Father John Mashoda, live at AT&T Stadium in a weird closet.
Oh, they turned the lights off. Thankfully, somebody came back by and then they turned them back on. So,
get out of there with a box of mac and cheese, John.
Well, I got to go right now. So,
Yep. And you can all read that on the
FBI. Yeah, please do. Please do. A lot of good stuff is going to be in there tomorrow morning. As soon as you wake up, grab your coffee, get on the Athletic.
And for our producer, Kent Garrison, I'm KT. We will see you soon, or hopefully, because we're going to preview the Panthers. Because they're coming, and they're going to be here before you even know it. All right? So that's next up. Cowboys win. Bye. About them Cowboys.
How about y'all fix this shit, bitch?